She minimized it and was back to Jimmy's page. She could hear swords clashing and Todd gloating. She didn't shift her focus to listen to what he was saying. She didn't dare. This wasn't the worst-case scenario. That would have been finding no way to give anyone their powers back, and the whole lot of them getting killed. This was the second worst-case scenario. The only person she could restore power to at the moment was Jimmy. Nobody trusted Jimmy, and nobody included Britt. Jimmy had killed people and proven himself untrustworthy. Now she was considering trusting him to save their lives. She didn't know what to do. But she knew what she didn't want to do, and that was explain why someone died while she was hesitating when she had a way to save them. She moved the mouse to the dampening field menu and thought, Philip isn't gonna like this. Gwen and Roy were getting tired, but they were still managing to fend off Tyler's and Gary's attacks. Martin, meanwhile, was having to work hard to battle Philip, who was under Todd's direct control. Normally, Martin would counterattack, but he had no wish to injure Philip, and knew that doing so wouldn't help anyway, so Martin was stuck playing defense. He tried to make up for this by pouring his extra energy into trash talk.
You're done for, Todd, Martin said. I've got your moves.
Really?
Todd asked.
What are my moves, then?
You keep trying the same two attacks in quick succession until you think I'm used to it. Then you try a third. You think you're gonna catch me off guard,
Todd said.
But not you. You're smart. You're paying far too much attention to Philip's sword arm for that to ever work, aren't you?
Martin said. You know it,
Todd said.
Let's see if you're ready for this.
Philip had been alternating between swinging at Martin's torso and his legs for a while. Martin was already watching for a change-up. His senses went on high alert. He watched Philip's sword arm, waiting for some hint of where he would attack next. The arms did not move. Philip barked, Martin! Martin looked up and saw that the spinning blue jewel that denoted who was under Todd's direct control was no longer hovering over Philip. In one smooth, coordinated motion, Martin cringed, yelped, and spun 180 degrees. He saw that Jimmy was now under Todd's control. Jimmy held his sword in two hands like an axe and was bringing it straight down with all of his force directly toward Martin's head. Time seemed to slow. Jimmy looked horrified. Martin was horrified. He tried to get his sword up to block, but he knew it would be too little too late. He saw his own blade rising, and beyond it, Jimmy's expression changed from horror to shock. In the last instant, the momentum went out of his swing, and his elbows seemed to lose all strength. Jimmy's blade slowed and struck Martin's sword with greatly reduced force. Jimmy's knees buckled. He dropped like a rag doll and landed on his butt, rolling backward on the slanted floor. But his face broke into a wide, delighted grin. From the computer, Britt yelled,
Jimmy! You've got your powers!
Todd let out an inarticulate cry of alarm and confusion, but was drowned out by Tyler, still hacking away at Roy, shrieking,
No, not Jimmy! Anyone but Jimmy!
Roy moaned in such a way as to make it clear that he did not disagree. Jimmy saw Gwen glancing wearily at him, distracting herself long enough for Gary to nick her left thigh. Martin was still cringing, with his sword over his head. He was looking down at Jimmy with an odd combination of hope and fear. Behind him, Philip was still in a holding pattern, waiting for his turn to attack. Philip looked Jimmy in the eye and said,
Don't screw us.
Jimmy scowled, said,
Extraction Penthouse,
and disappeared. 33. Philip and Tyler were stunned. Martin, Gwen, and Roy didn't have that luxury, since they still had to fend off the pre-programmed attacks of their friends. Philip had come out of wait mode and swung on Martin immediately after Jimmy left the system. Gary seemed on the verge of passing out. Gwen slapped him as hard as she could between blocking his sword strikes, but if having his body attempt to kill a good friend wasn't enough to keep him awake, a few slaps didn't have much chance. Todd allowed himself half a second to smile over Jimmy's departure, then turned his attention to the strange woman sitting at his computer.
Stop that!
He shrieked. Britt paid him no attention, focusing on moving through the remaining windows as fast as she could, looking for someone, anyone other than Jimmy, to liberate. If Todd had been thinking, he'd have used his powers to stop Britt, or he might have teleported to the desk to stop her, or he may have put his energy into sprinting there. It wasn't that far, after all. Todd was not thinking. Todd shouted,
"Hey! Get away from my stuff!"
He moved with a strange gait that was half-jogging, half-jumping up and down, waving his arms, trying to get Britt's attention.
"You! I said stop! Stop messing with my stuff!"
Roy, still fending off Tyler's blade, hissed,
"You had to open your mouth. If you hadn't said that, he might have helped us."
"No," Tyler said. "If that was enough to put him off, he'd have found another excuse."
At the same time, Philip asked Martin,
"Extraction? Penthouse? You know that spell?"
"No," Martin said, blocking a swing with arms that were clearly fatigued. "But I have other things to worry about right now."
Todd was standing at the entrance to his weird 3/4 of an apartment, yelling up at Britt. She was still ignoring him. She found a window that looked exactly like the screen that had restored Jimmy's powers, only this one featured Tyler. She scanned for the drop-down menu she'd used before. Todd shouted,
"Hey! Hey!"
He stopped. The anger drained from his face. He said,
"Hey,"
this time at himself. He followed the power cord from the back of the monitor down to the power strip under the desk, which was just below his eye level. He yanked the cord from its socket. The screen went dark before Britt could get the mouse to the proper menu. She cursed and looked under the desk. Todd smiled at her as he pulled his tablet from his bag, turned it on, poked at the screen, and disappeared. Britt heard a rustling behind her. She turned and saw Todd standing over her. He had his tablet in both hands and was wound up to swing it at her head like a wrestler with a metal folding chair. The world seemed to go silent and still. Britt saw the look of murder in his eyes, saw the metal back of the tablet waiting to strike. She was distracted by the fleeting thought that she was going to die with an Apple logo pressed into her forehead, which pleased her a bit. Britt lifted her left arm to shield her head and readied her right to punch Todd in the face once his tablet was clear of his head. She waited for a fraction of a second, anticipating the impact on her forearm. It didn't come. He still hadn't swung.
"Has he lost his nerve?" Britt wondered. "Is he toying with me?" "Why don't you do it already?" Britt asked.
Todd remained still, his face a mask of rage and hatred. But a voice from above and behind Britt said,
"He can't."
Britt stood. Todd remained frozen, only his eyes moved. She turned and saw that the fighting had stopped. Philip and Tyler seemed to have control of their movement back. Philip cradled his left arm with great care. Gary remained frozen like a statue, poised mid-thrust. Gwen, Martin, and Roy were all exhausted, but in one piece. Britt asked,
"What happened?"
None of the others spoke, but the voice, Jimmy's voice, said,
"I've saved you. Surprising, though, that clearly is."
There was a terrible rumbling sound. The roof of the circular chamber shook. Cracks ran the ceiling circumference. Then the whole thing lifted into the air like an immense manhole cover. What had been a large room was now a hole in the ground. They looked up at the circular disk of rock that hung in the air above them. Below it, standing at the rim, was Jimmy. His hair and beard were neatly trimmed. He wore a slim black suit. Behind him, the lava fountain, the billowing clouds of smoke and soot, and the sullen gray clouds were all frozen, as if someone had paused the world. He waved his hand, and the former roof flew away like a carelessly discarded frisbee. Jimmy took a single step. His stride was relaxed and casual. In that one step, he covered all the space between where he started, on the far rim of the crater, to where he landed, in what was left of Todd's office, next to Britt and Todd. Jimmy brought his face in close to Todd's.
"What do you think?"
he asked.
"How do you like my version of your macro? I haven't implemented it the same way, of course. There are differences. For instance, the force fields that hold you were created automatically when I targeted you in real time.
Jimmy motioned to Britt.
I could immobilize her in an instant, right now.
Jimmy smiled, glanced at Britt, saw the look on her face, then added,
But I won't. I wouldn't. That was just an example. You can relax.
Britt said,
Good.
But she didn't relax. Jimmy shook his head. He turned away from Todd and Britt. He looked down at the others. They were winded, wounded, and filthy, and not one of them seemed totally happy to see him. The only one who wasn't looking up at him wearily was Gary, whom he had deliberately left bound by Todd's force fields.
Well, first things first,
Jimmy said. He stretched out his arm toward Gary and said,
Quest extraction, Gary!
Gary disappeared.
Where'd you send him?
Tyler demanded. Jimmy closed his eyes and rubbed his temples. He opened his eyes and saw that Tyler was watching him like a hawk, ready to dodge at the slightest hint of trouble. Jimmy thought for a moment about how he must look, standing there with his fingers to his temples. He dropped his hands and said,
Oh, come on! Who do you think I am, Magneto? I sent Gary to a doctor. Louisa, the doctor in Atlantis.
He turned back to Britt.
She's good, right?
Britt said, Yeah, the best.
Good,
Jimmy said.
Right, that's what Britt the Elder said.
Britt the Younger said, That's where you went? To Britt the Elder?
Yeah, where else? Who would you go to for help?
Britt chose not to answer that, but said,
If you did anything to harm her, she'd have seen it coming a mile away,
Jimmy interrupted.
Because you would find out right now that I'd done it, and she'd have remembered that before I ever showed up. Come on! You gave me my powers back, but I didn't know how fully or what the best thing to do with them would be, so I went to future you for help. Together we came up with a plan. Is that so hard to understand?
Philip asked,
Why didn't you just come right back the next instant, then?
He and the others had all limped closer to the edge of the apartment.
Why leave us here fighting?
Jimmy smiled down at him, then said,
Showmanship!
Jimmy looked at the exhausted faces looking up at him and saw that his answer was insufficient. He sighed, then added,
And if I'm being honest,
Tyler snorted.
If?
After your reaction to Britt here giving me my powers first, I wanted you all to appreciate my contribution a bit more. I knew I had to come back and help you, but I wanted you all to know that really, I didn't have to. You see what I'm saying? I couldn't just leave you all to die, but I could have.
And we're glad you didn't,
Roy said.
But you clearly weren't in a hurry. You took the time to go to the barber and get a new suit.
Jimmy said,
The suit's not new. I transported out, contacted Britt the Elder, let Eddie know what was going on. Then, yes, I cleaned myself up. I was going to be working with a lady, and I didn't want to do it wearing leather pants and a fur cloak that I looted from a corpse before going on a 2-week hike.
Roy was satisfied with the answer, but not so much so that he actually said anything. Jimmy looked down at the group. They looked up at him, as if he were on a stage. He asked,
Before I continue with the business of saving your skins, are there any more questions?
Martin raised his hand. Jimmy said,
Yes?
The trigger phrase you used to escape? Extraction penthouse? What is that? It's not any spell I've ever heard. It sure isn't one of the spells we're allowing you to use while you're on probation.
Jimmy sucked his teeth for a second, then said,
Yeah... I guess I should come clean about that. Remember 3 years ago when I told you that I'd voluntarily strip myself of all my powers? Yeah, that wasn't true. I had taken the time to set up my own shell program you all didn't know about.
So, when you said you had no powers, you actually had all of your powers?
Philip said, unimpressed.
No, Jimmy said. Not at that time. But I've added to it since then. When?
Martin asked.
You haven't had access to any computers. In your time,
Jimmy said,
I've been zipping back to modern times on a regular basis to work on my shell program.
How often?
Roy asked.
Once a week, and I'd stay there for a week. It's like I'm bi-coastal, but with time. I've been splitting my time between Lead Church and a condo I keep in the future.
It's a good place to unwind and take a break from your constant suspicions.
Our well-founded suspicions, Tyler said.
But when were you doing this? Martin asked. We've been watching you 24/7.
Jimmy blushed slightly.
Not quite 24/7, Martin. None of you watched me when I went to the bathroom.
Todd, although held immobile, managed to make a muffled but unmistakably triumphant sound. Jimmy looked at Todd and said,
Ah, yes. Thanks for reminding me. Time to get back to business.
Jimmy stepped over to Todd, placed a hand on his shoulder, and said,
Extraction penthouse.
Jimmy and Todd both disappeared. The room was silent for a moment. Then Jimmy and Todd reappeared. Jimmy was wearing an entirely different, beautifully tailored suit. Todd was no longer paralyzed, but he looked drawn and haggard. His clothes were rumpled and sweat-stained. He looked as if he'd been to hell and back. Gwen asked,
Where did you take him?
Jimmy said,
I told you, my condo.
What did you do to him?
Gwen persisted.
I asked him some questions, Jimmy said, and I waited until he decided to answer.
He wouldn't give me food or water,
Todd blurted.
And he wouldn't let me sleep.
Jimmy smiled.
I said I waited, not that I waited patiently.
Philip said,
Jimmy!
Oh, spare me, Philip. He put us through the ringer. Then he was going to slice us up like deli meat. Before you leap to judge me, yet again, don't you think you should ask me what information I got from him?
Philip said,
Yeah, I guess.
Jimmy smiled down at Philip. Philip looked up at Jimmy. Jimmy tilted his head to the side, questioningly. Philip rolled his eyes. Jimmy smiled a bit wider. Philip exhaled loudly, then said,
Okay, fine. What information did you get from Todd?
Jimmy said,
There, thank you. Was that so hard?
Philip said,
Yes.
Jimmy said,
Splendid. I got the password to his encrypted hard drive. It's Hot Toddy. You can see why he resisted telling me. Anyway, on the drive, you'll find all the details of how he did all this, all the footage of the quest that he's gathered, and the exact telemetry of precisely how, when, and where Jeff died. If you're clever enough, you should be able to think of a way to save him. If you're not, the Brits almost certainly will be.
Good, Roy said. Well done, Jimmy.
Jimmy said, Thank you. See, everyone? That's how it's done.
Yeah, yeah, Roy said. So, now what do we do with Hot Toddy over there?
Jimmy looked at Todd and said,
We don't do anything with him. We don't have him. I have him, and I have to decide what to do with him. Todd, what do you think I should do with you? Should I send you back to prison where I found you? Or should I strand you somewhere in the past?
Todd glowered at Jimmy.
It doesn't matter. Lock me up wherever and however you like. I'll escape again like I did before. And when I do, you're all dead. No playing around this time. Just a big dirt nap. All of you!
Jimmy said, Ah, so it's the third option.
He placed a hand on Todd's shoulder and said,
Execution, Todd.
Todd disappeared. No fanfare, no light show. He just blinked out of existence. Britt recoiled in horror. Being that close when one person killed another in cold blood repulsed her to her core. Jimmy held up his hands and said to Britt,
You're safe. I'm not going to hurt you or anyone else. I knew you'd react like this. You as Britt the Elder, you were expecting me, but you didn't seem at all pleased to see me.
Gwen shouted,
You killed him!
Jimmy turned back to the group, hands still raised.
Yes, I did. What was the alternative, Gwen? Leave him alive? That's what we did last time. That's what you all did with me. Are you happy with how either of those decisions worked out?
We don't do that, Jimmy!
Gwen cried.
We don't kill people!
That's pretty much what I was just saying, Gwen.
We aren't murderers!
No, Jimmy said. You're not. None of you are murderers.
Tyler asked,
And you are a murderer, Jimmy? Is that it?
Jimmy laughed.
Tyler,
That is one hell of a question for you, of all people, to ask me. Although in my defense, this is the first time I've deliberately killed. Rickard's Bend was an accident, and when I tried to kill the rest of you, I failed.
Well, good for you, Tyler said. I'm sure you're very proud.
No, I'm not.
Jimmy exhaled deeply.
This is the worst I've ever felt, but I did what I knew was right. I don't blame you for reacting this way, all of you, and I won't blame you for celebrating after my next trick.
Why? Tyler asked. What are you gonna do?
Jimmy said,
You don't know? It was your suggestion, Tyler. I came back to you all because I wanted to somehow make amends for what I'd done. But you pointed out that there are some things that are just too bad to ever make up for.
Like ghosting me, Tyler said.
Well, yes, that, Jimmy said, and accidentally killing an entire village of innocent people. You know, Tyler, I'm not the only one who has some selfishness issues to work through. Anyway, you told me your distrust runs so deep that the only way you all would ever accept that I truly have seen the error of my ways would be for me to go to my grave, having never harmed any of you again.
Tyler said, Yeah, that's about right.
Jimmy lifted his chin, striking what he calculated to be a noble pose.
That, friends, is what I intend to do.
Philip said,
Your next trick is that you won't hurt us.
Martin mumbled,
Kind of an anticlimax.
No, Jimmy said. I'm going to deliberately end my existence. I will prove my good intentions and give all those I've wronged peace of mind by removing myself from the equation permanently. A thick silence descended while everyone wrestled with the implications of what he just said. Finally, Philip broke the silence, saying what everyone else was thinking.
No, you won't.
Jimmy smiled benevolently.
Yes, Philip, I will.
This is the most transparent lie you've ever told,
Jimmy said.
Is not?
Philip asked.
It's not transparent, or it's not a lie,
Jimmy said.
Whichever,
Philip said.
Jimmy, you're not going to kill yourself. You like yourself far too much for that. This is just a chance for you to get away from us, since it's clear we aren't going to give you what you want. It won't work anyway. We have the file, Jimmy. Go ahead. Fake your own death. We can track you.
You can try, Jimmy said. And the file will tell you that I'm dead, but that won't satisfy you. You'll realize that I've had 3 years of unsupervised time and that I could have used it to find a way to mask my entry in the file, making it appear that I'm deceased when I'm not. You can never be sure, one way or the other. So I suggest you don't look in the first place.
Jimmy looked down at the faces of the people he'd just saved and saw a sea of skepticism. He glanced at Britt, who was glaring at him with her arms folded. Jimmy laughed.
You don't believe me, do you?
Martin said.
No.
Jimmy laughed again.
So you see my point.
Jimmy laughed alone yet again, then let out a heaving sigh.
Okay. Look at it this way. There are three ways this situation can play out. The first option is that I'm telling the truth, and I'm going to actually do it, in which case you will never see me again.
Philip said,
Go on.
Jimmy said,
The second is that you're right, and I am going to fake it. That might be a problem if I were bent on revenge, but I've had every chance to kill all of you several times over and haven't. Clearly, this would just be a play to get out of your lives and get on with my own. In that case, if I do it right, you'll never see me again.
And the third option? Philip asked.
Jimmy said,
It's the same as the second option, only I screw up and we bump into each other at some point in the future. If that happens, now instead of being mad at me for having tried and failed to kill all of you, you can be mad at me for having not really tried to kill myself.
Philip said,
I think I can manage to be mad at you for both things.
Gwen said,
Jimmy, nobody wants you to kill yourself.
Maybe not, Jimmy said, but nobody wants me around either. Philip smirked.
You're really going to do this, aren't you?
Jimmy went back into his practiced, noble pose.
Yes, I am.
Philip smiled.
By do this, I mean play out this ridiculous charade.
Jimmy pretended not to hear. He closed his eyes and held up a hand to silence all argument and stop any movement.
Don't try to stop me.
Roy said,
We won't.
Jimmy put one hand over his heart and reached the other hand up toward the heavens. He parted his lips to speak, then said,
Oh, by the way, once I'm gone, just plug the monitor back in. Britt was just about to give Tyler his powers back when it was unplugged. It'll be easy for him to get the rest of you out of here.
Britt started to speak, but Jimmy held up a finger and shushed her. He resumed his death pose. He parted his lips again to speak. But Philip interrupted.
Jimmy,
Philip said.
I get what you're doing here, and I'm grateful to you for coming back to help us.
If by help you mean save,
Jimmy said.
But,
Philip said,
if we should ever meet again, it won't be pleasant.
Jimmy said,
Believe me, I know that.
Philip and Jimmy shared a small chuckle. Then Jimmy again struck his death pose. He parted his lips and uttered his final spell.
Execute a noble end.
Everybody waited.
For James Sadler.
They all held their breath.
Who is known far and wide as...
Philip exhaled.
Merlin.
Everyone grew noticeably impatient. Jimmy blurted,
At one time.
A lightning bolt streaked down from the frozen sky, striking Jimmy and obliterating him in an instant. When the shock had worn off and the smoke had cleared, the spot where Jimmy had been standing was not marked with the expected crater or scorch mark, but rather with a tasteful tombstone, which read, James Sadler. He never betrayed us again. 34. In downtown Reno, there was a high-rise hotel casino that had somehow managed to go bankrupt. The new owners converted the building into luxury timeshare condos and divided the top two floors into luxury penthouses. Jimmy materialized in one of these, the one he had purchased. It was the less expensive of the two, but it had what Jimmy believed was the best view in Reno, because it faced away from Reno and toward the mountains. He bought the place new. It came fully furnished. The first thing he did was hire a decorator and gave her one instruction.
Make it look like it's not in Reno.
As a result, he had a home full of expensive-looking, understated furniture. His designer got a nice fat payday, and the local second-hand shops were flooded with brand-new furniture made mostly of mirrors, pleather, and gold electroplate. Jimmy spent a moment enjoying the view. These transitional moments in life always left him feeling a bit wistful. He didn't think he would miss Ledchurch. He knew he wouldn't miss having everybody treat him like a monster. He had the sneaking suspicion that he might miss having people know that he was a monster. There was a certain amount of respect that came with the monstrousness. Nobody liked him in Ledchurch, but everybody was aware of his work. Jimmy didn't know what he would do with the rest of his life, but he knew what the first step had to be. He took a deep breath, turned, and faced Todd, who was sitting comfortably in Jimmy's Eames lounge chair. Todd said,
I love this chair.
I thought you might. Of course, Jimmy thought, Tyler would consider putting that chair in a wealthy bachelor's penthouse a cliché.
The idea brought Jimmy more than a little pleasure.
Did they buy it?
Todd asked.
Well enough, Jimmy answered.
Jimmy sat down on the black leather couch opposite Todd, and the two men looked at each other for a few seconds before Jimmy broke the silence.
I sense you have questions, Todd.
Todd said,
I did everything you asked me to, didn't I? I gave you the password to my drive. I told you exactly where and when I killed Jeff. I showed you all my macros, and I pretended you'd starve me to get me to talk.
Jimmy said, Yes, those are the things I asked you to do, and you did all of them.
So why can't I move?
Todd asked.
Jimmy smiled. I'll explain that in a minute. But first, I have a question for you. Todd, what have we learned?
What?
What have you learned? Jimmy clarified. What has this experience taught you?
Todd thought for a moment, then said,
Not underestimate you and your buddies?
Jimmy smiled broadly.
Todd, they aren't my buddies. They'd have been the first people to tell you that if you just asked. You do have a point, though, in a way. As a group, they do have a talent for messing up plans, both other people's and their own.
Todd squinted at Jimmy.
What do you mean? They beat me.
Yes, but not according to their plans. Heck, the main plan they live their lives by is to settle in and try to be left alone. But they behave in such a way as to make even that impossible. What else did you learn?
Todd was silent.
Jimmy shrugged and said, Nothing? Fair enough. It's my turn anyway. Here's what I learned. There are some mistakes you can never make up for. There are things you do wrong that you can never make right. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try. You should. But if it becomes clear that you won't succeed, drop it. To force the issue just tortures the people you wronged in the first place. Once you've made your feelings clear, it's better to leave and get on with your life.
Jimmy studied Todd's face, looking for some hint of understanding.
Take me, for example, Jimmy continued. There are, in a sense, three of me. The Jimmy I was, the Jimmy I am today, and the Jimmy I want to be tomorrow. I can't change how the Jimmy I was behaved. I know how I want the Jimmy of tomorrow to act. I'm neither of those guys. I'm the Jimmy of today. But, theoretically, by behaving like I hope the Jimmy of tomorrow will act, I can make the Jimmy of today less like yesterday's Jimmy. See what I mean?
Todd said, I think so.
You have to think about it?
Jimmy asked. Todd said,
No.
Jimmy leaned forward, just that much closer to Todd, to drive his point just that much further home.
Past Jimmy, he explained. Would have taken someone like you, someone clever but not smart, and he would have lied and manipulated and used you for his own profit.
Jimmy studied Todd, who was immobile, save for his mouth and facial expressions, looking for some sign that he understood. Jimmy locked eyes with Todd and continued.
Future Jimmy, on the other hand, would have done what he said he was going to do. He'd have destroyed you quickly and humanely, because that was the only way to keep the people he had wronged safe from you, and because I want future Jimmy to be a man of his word.
What's present Jimmy going to do?
Jimmy said.
Present Jimmy isn't sure. He's one of life's little ironies. I tried to kill Philip Martin and their friends, and I failed. Now I feel responsible for making sure nobody else kills them either. That said, I don't really like the idea of killing you. I told them I would erase you, and I still could. It would be instant and painless. I could also reinstate your magnetic field, send you back to the facility, and send word to Miller and Murphy to make sure no computer is ever brought anywhere near you again. You'd most likely die of old age, after several more decades of solitary confinement and reading about video games.
Well, what do you think you're going to do?
Todd asked.
I think I'm going to err on the side of mercy.
Okay,
Todd said.
Which of those options is the merciful one?
Jimmy said,
I don't know. You tell me.
Todd looked out the window at the Sierra Nevada mountains, thought for a while, then said,
I don't want to go back to prison.
Jimmy said,
Fair enough.
He stood up, crossed the room, placed the palm of his hand on Todd's forehead like a faith healer, and said,
Execute Todd Disposition Macro 2.
Todd was gone. Jimmy spent a long time looking out the window, thinking about what he had done. Then he turned around and walked into his office. His computer was just as he left it, juiced up and ready for work. Jimmy sat down, cracked his knuckles, and got on with his life. 35. Jeff felt the ground beneath his feet threatening to give way. He saw the concerned faces of the others, Philip, Gary, and Tyler. Even Jimmy seemed worried. Jeff looked down. His heels and the balls of his feet were on the ground, but his toes hung out in midair over a sickening drop. He felt the ground shuddering and shifting under his weight. He looked back to his friends. They were farther away now. Jeff knew that they weren't moving. He was, and soon he would pick up quite a bit of speed.
"I can't fly," he thought.
"And I'm not invulnerable. I think this is it. At least I can go out with some class."
Jeff felt the ground give way beneath him, and without consulting his brain, his mouth blurted out, "Crud!" Jeff was falling. The rock on which he had stood caught on a fissure in the cliff face, pivoted, and threw Jeff out into the clear, where he had a straight fall all the way down to the canyon floor. His mind was clogged with panic. Time seemed to slow to a crawl. Jeff was so fascinated by the sight of his own upcoming demise that he didn't even hear Roy's voice at first.
"Kid," Roy said. "Kid, you with me?"
Jeff said,
"What?"
His own voice sounded deep and slow to his ears, but Roy's voice sounded normal.
"Listen up, kid. We've slowed down time. Well, actually, we sped you up. We overclocked your brain as much as we dare. We got the trick from that doctor they have in Atlantis."
Jeff's mind felt as fast as ever, but his voice droned,
"Why?"
"We're gonna get you out of this. Now we need you to hold still."
"I'm falling."
"Yeah, I know. You can't help that, but stop flapping your arms around."
"You'd flap too."
"Just cut it out,"
Roy snapped. Jeff froze as best he could under the circumstances.
"Okay," Roy said. "That's good. Hold it just like that."
Jeff thought,
"And of course now my nose itches. Man, the ground's still coming up really fast, isn't it? Even slowed down to this pace, I wouldn't survive the impact. Actually, he said time wasn't slower, just my brain is sped up. So I'm still falling at the same speed, and I'll hit with just as much force. I'm just getting more time to experience it. Fantastic."
Jeff heard a female voice say,
"Okay, we've scanned him. Rendering the simulation now."
Way down near the canyon floor, Jeff saw a light source. He squinted into the wind. It was Todd's webcam window.
"He's all lined up to watch me go splat," Jeff thought.
"Bastard's got a front row seat."
The female voice said,
"Ready."
"Okay," Roy said. "Keep still just a second or two more. We need to time this right."
The ground was getting very close now. It took all of Jeff's willpower to keep from putting his arms out in front of himself. Not that it would have helped. Roy said,
"Now."
There was a flash, and Jeff was awash in a sea of blinding light and bright colors. Time accelerated back to normal. Jeff's ears were filled with the rushing sound of wind. His eyes adjusted. He saw that it was a bright, sunny day, and he was many hundreds of feet above the ground. Green trees and rolling hills spread out beneath him. Directly below, he saw a town and recognized it as Leadchurch. This was all an improvement, but he was still falling. As if on cue, Roy's voice said,
"You have your powers back. You can start flying anytime you like."
Jeff stopped himself, then hung suspended in the sky, catching his breath.
"Welcome back," Roy said.
Jeff thought he could hear the traces of a smile in Roy's voice.
"We're all over at Phillip's shop. Come by when you're ready to join us."
Jeff found a surprisingly large group of people waiting for him in the street in front of the shop. He'd expected Roy, and it made sense for Philip, Tyler, and Gary to be there. He was happy to see Martin and Gwen as well, although he didn't know how they were involved in all this. What really surprised him was that the Brits were there. But upon seeing them, he suddenly recognized the female voice that had been assisting Roy was probably one of theirs. Jeff came to a landing and was greeted a bit more enthusiastically than he was prepared for. Philip asked,
"So, what did you think of New Zealand?"
"Is that where we were?" Jeff asked. Philip said,
"Turns out."
"Yeah," Jeff said. "What I saw of it, I didn't like so much." As they all filed through Philip's shop and upstairs to the rec room,
Jeff said to Roy, "Thanks for saving me, but why didn't you just yank me out of there?"
"We couldn't let Todd see that we'd rescued you," Roy explained. "We had to switch you with a copy."
"A copy?" Jeff asked. "Of me? We can copy people?"
"Kinda. It was a computer-generated automaton.
It's a trick we picked up from Todd's hard drive."
"I don't know why I was worried," Jeff said, chuckling. "We're time travelers. I should have known you all would find a way to save me."
"Not necessarily," Britt the Elder said. "If we hadn't been told the precise time and place that you'd been killed, we wouldn't have been able to intervene. We can't change an event we don't know about. If Todd had managed to kill you all without anybody knowing when and where, we would all be dead. It's something you all should keep in mind."
"But you don't have to keep it in mind?"
Britt the Younger asked.
"The fact that I'm still here proves that I did keep it in mind, and that you did too, I suppose. Well done, dear."
Jeff looked around. The room looked much as he remembered it, except there were two large laptops on the coffee table, with a microphone headset wired up and ready for use. He settled down in one of Philip's lounge chairs. He sighed contentedly, then looked up at everyone else. None of them were sitting. They all stood in front of him, smiling down, unnervingly happy to see him. Looking at them now, he saw that Philip, Tyler, Gary, and Martin were all wearing brand new robes and hats. The colors were slightly different. The designs were fancier. The silver sequins on Martin's robe were smaller and interspersed with what looked like rhinestones. Philip's robe now incorporated some patch of black fur. Even Roy's trench coat and modified fedora were different.
"How long have I been gone?" Jeff asked.
"About a month and a half," Roy said.
Jeff said, "You took your time."
"We wanted to do it right," Roy answered. "There were animations to plot. It had to look absolutely convincing."
Jeff thought for a second, then said, "Fair enough. What'd I miss?" Philip said,
"I broke my arm."
Martin said,
"Gwen has moved in with me."
Gary said,
"I have a robot foot."
He lifted his leg and displayed the gleaming chrome appendage starting just below his knee. The metal toes clacked together as he wiggled them for effect.
"Huh," Jeff said. "A robot foot. That's the third coolest possible cyborg body part."
"I know,"
Gary said. Gwen's expression soured. Martin leaned close and whispered,
"What?"
Gwen said,
"Third coolest robot body part. You boys."
Martin said,
"Yeah. Hand, eye, then foot."
"What's wrong with that?" Gwen frowned.
"Nothing," she said. "Never mind."
Gary continued.
"It's a false construct, of course. Not a real robot part. But still, it seems real, and it has three different looks. This one, a dragon's claw, or a normal human foot. But I never use that one."
"Why would you?"
Jeff said.
"There's no reason to when you can have a robot foot,"
Gary agreed.
"I keep fake skulls around just so I can stomp on them."
Jeff said, "Cool.
Anything else happen?"
Martin said,
"Well, Jimmy's dead."
"No, he isn't,"
Philip added quickly. Jeff asked,
"How'd he die?"
Philip said,
"He didn't."
Martin answered,
"He took his own life."
Philip said,
"Nobody really believes that."
Gwen stepped in.
"He realized that we would never be able to truly forgive him, but we also couldn't let him run around free if we knew he was alive. So he made it look like he ended himself, but he may have just gone off to make a new life somewhere else."
"And we're just letting him go?"
Jeff asked.
Philip said,
"We've looked at the file, and he appears to be dead. If he is still alive, we can't find him. Anyway, he was right. What he did was unforgivable, and we never would have trusted him again. But we have no concrete reason to believe he has, or had, any evil intent."
"I don't know," Jeff said. "I don't like the idea that he's still out there."
Martin said,
"Yeah, I agree. But most of us don't really like the idea that he isn't still out there either."
"Look," Philip said, "it doesn't matter. Jimmy didn't want to kill us, or else we'd be dead. He made it pretty clear that he doesn't want to spend any more time with us, and I know that none of us want to spend any more time with him. I'm confident that we'll never see Jimmy again.
Britt the Elder said,
Yes.
Which Philip found quite encouraging. Until she added,
You are totally confident of that. Right now.
Philip thought about what she might have meant by that, and deflated noticeably.
And now, Britt the Elder said, You're less confident.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of An Unwelcome Quest by Scott Meyer. Performed by Luke Daniels. Directed by Colleen Willits. Engineered by Patrick Murdoch. Performance copyright 2014 by Brilliance Audio, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225. Or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.